Next case for argument this morning is Versiks against Smith. Wait till the rustling has quieted down in a moment.
Certainly.
Mr. Hakim.
May it please the Court, Ranjit Hakim on behalf of Appellant Albert M. Versiks. On September 1, 1999, Appellant pled no contest to burglary and agreed not to exercise his right to put the state to its proof on allegations.
Well, he's not in he's not in custody anymore, is he?
He is, sir.
Pardon?
He is. He's at Sandridge.
But I see. So I thought his only complaint is about the registration requirement?
No, he remains in custody. There's parallel proceedings in Wisconsin to have him civilly committed as a sex offender that are being held in abeyance pending this action.
But I thought, maybe I may be completely wrong, but my understanding was the only reason his only dissatisfaction with his sentence was the registration, that he felt he was tricked into pleading guilty because he didn't know that the underlying felony was a sex offense would get him registered.
Here, Judge Posner.
But if that's all he cares about, why is it habeas corpus, right? I mean, it's not the custody that bothers him; it's some ancillary sanction.
Judge Posner,
which is not a custodial sanction.
That actually goes to the core of part of Versnick's argument, which is that the order to register as a sex offender, given that he was convicted of a non-sexual offense, is in fact punitive in his case and part of his punishment, such that when he agreed to the plea, he understood...
But see, what my problem is, habeas corpus is used because you think your detention is unlawful. Now, I understand your argument. You think the detention is unlawful because he wasn't warned about the registration, and if he'd been warned, he wouldn't have been... He wouldn't have accepted the plea. Maybe he would have gotten out. But the only infirmity that he... But as I say, the only relief he wants is not custodial in the character. It's to get the registration lifted, isn't it? What if the government said, okay, we'll cancel the registration? I don't know if they can do that, but suppose they no registration. So what would he have left to argue?
I think that there are two issues in the case. I think one is the Apprendi issue and the other is the voluntariness of the plea issue. If he was prevail on the Apprendi issue, the relief would simply be to strike the registration. If he was prevail on the voluntariness of the plea issue, however, I think the relief is that he gets to go back and with competent counsel decide whether or not he wants to take this deal.
But the only thing that would affect his judgment on whether to take the plea would be the registration, right?
Correct. He would understand what the underlying felony was and that it would expose him to this additional penalty.
But functionally, isn't his complaint not about his detention but about his registration?
Correct. However, his view
is... Isn't that an odd thing to be challenging in a habeas corpus proceeding? Because it's not detention, right? The registration isn't detention. It's not custody.
It's non-custodial,
it's
but it
just
is in fact
information. That's embarrassing, I guess. It's just something on a computer, right?
I think it's probably more, particularly for a non-sexual offender, it's more than just embarrassing. It is actually an affirmative disability, an affirmative restraint.
How so?
It's just
a notice, as I understand it.
So if it was simply information, I think
Well, how is information custody?
Information is custody to the extent that it limits one's liberty in the same way that...
Well, I don't understand that. I mean, on that theory, you could bring habeas corpus because you've been accused by the police chief of being a criminal. You're not prosecuted. You say, this guy's a criminal, but we can't prove it, so on. Of course, it could be defamation. But could you actually bring a habeas corpus action on the ground that his accusation against you was a form of custody because now people shunned you?
I don't think that defamation by the...
Well, how is this different? This is, I mean, he doesn't like having his name listed as a sex offender, which is understandable, of course. But how is that... How is that concern about this defamatory listing any different from my hypothetical case?
I think because the information came as part of his punishment. It came in addition to his 10 years in prison, in addition to his exposure for a $10,000 fine.
But that was that was true, I would suppose, about Smith against Doe. And I've just looked that case up, and that was a 1983 action. Lawyers and the Supreme Court did not think it proper under 2254. Why would this case be different?
If you're fined, I mean, suppose your criminal sanction is a fine. You can't attack that in habeas corpus. There's no custody. Why is this worse than a fine? Or more custodial than a fine?
Your Honor, this may be an issue that I should reserve for rebuttal and take a few moments to think about.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Assuming that habeas corpus is the proper context for this plea or for this action, it should not have come as a 1983 action. I think there are probably two main issues in this case, reserving that issue. The first issue is whether or not Versneeks understood, as sort of a matter of fact, that sexual assault was the underlying intended felony.
Well, wasn't there a finding of some sort in the state court?
The state court, the appellant did in fact move in his appeal to withdraw his plea. However, the state court found that he knew what the underlying intended felony
was.
Right,
well, so why aren't we bound by that?
So that...
Seems plausible. I mean, he knew.
My view is that finding was an unreasonable determination of the facts in light of the evidence in the record. So if one looks at the complaint, if one looks at the preliminary hearing, if one looks at the information...
Yeah, but what about the common sense of it, right?
Well, so the...
Common sense says he knows he's a sex offender.
I think the common sense is not so clear, especially where he has...
What is this business about the notion that he entered the house to use the facilities? What's that about?
I think that emphasizes how...
What facilities? What are they talking about?
The appellant has alleged that he was misinformed of the underlying felony.
What are the facilities?
The facilities would be the actual property in the house.
What does that mean? Can't it be concrete? Turn on a faucet or something? Or what? What's going on?
I don't think that it's actually a felony. I think that underlies...
What were they talking about when they said, or he said, that he entered to use the facilities?
My understanding from the record is that the appellant was so misguided that he did not understand that was
you're
not...
You're not answering my question. What does the term entering to use the facilities mean?
My understanding is that use the facilities could include something as mundane as using a faucet without permission. I think that emphasizes how misled...
But that wouldn't be a felony, right? He pleaded guilty to entering a place with intent to commit a felony therein.
Correct. I think that underlies how misinformed Versneeks was by his counsel, that he was not able to understand... Yeah.
Now I'm totally lost. I thought from your brief that your client was conceding, and always had conceded, that he intended to commit a felony inside, and it was only a claim that he didn't know which felony.
Correct.
Now it sounds like you're saying he didn't actually intend to commit a felony inside.
I think appellant believed that that was a felony. He believed that use of the facilities without permission.
But a far more plausible interpretation is that while his argument, his line, his claim was that he just went in to, you know, use the bathroom or something, in fact, he pleaded guilty to entering to commit a felony, and the only felony was the sex, right?
Your Honor, I think that the...
What other felony might there have been, do you think?
Substantial battery is consistent with some of the testimony in the complaint and the preliminary hearing, as is false imprisonment. It's not unreasonable for the appellant to believe that the intended felony could have related to uncharged conduct.
But I thought his contention was that he entered to use the facilities, not to batter anybody.
Correct. I think, Your Honor, from...
Did he say it wasn't sex, it was battery?
He did not. I think that the...
So why wouldn't it be reasonable for the state court to say, well, the only felony in the picture is the sex felony, so he must know that as a sexual felon, he could be registered?
Your Honor, I think the reality is that appellant looked at the fact that...
Well, you say you think it's the reality, but why is your thinking of what the reality is enough to upend the state court's finding?
Based on the record...
It doesn't seem like a foolish finding. It seems kind of common sense.
Based on the record, the appellant was looking to minimize the amount of time that he would serve. He understood that his belief was that he did not commit a sexual assault. That's testimony that's in the post-conviction hearings.
And the state courts didn't believe him, is that correct?
Correct.
Why isn't that the end of the case right there?
I believe the state court's finding there is unreasonable in that they cite the complaint, the information, the preliminary hearing as evidence of information about the sexual offense. If you look at all three of those factors, it's clear that the intended felony is never specified, and at the time, the state is attempting to prove a sexual assault charge, which they later drop and agree to, and appellant's understanding is that those allegations will not be considered. The state court also looked at the pre-sentence report and its order that a sexual psycho survey be issued for the appellant. Dr. Nelson looked at exactly that same information and came away with the impression that the plea was to a non-assaulting crime.
When the state trial judge took the plea, did either the defendant or the prosecutor, did someone have to give a statement of what had happened?
There was a statement at the preliminary hearing.
I see.
Factual basis was taken from the complaint and from the preliminary hearing, but that was at the time when sexual assault was a charge the state was looking to pursue. I think that the plea changes how...
So at the preliminary hearing, that was still on the table?
Correct.
So that did get into the official record?
Correct.
So the state trial judge taking the plea committed no impropriety in looking at that material, did he?
No. But I think the state trial judge was took an unreasonable view in light of the plea as to what those facts in the record meant.
Could you expand on that? Why was it unreasonable?
It was unreasonable because appellant testified that he did not understand what the underlying felony was at the time.
Yeah, but that gets back to Judge Ripple's question, why they have to believe his testimony.
I think there's a lot of evidence in the record that his testimony is credible. You have the pre-sentence report writer.
When a trier of fact disbelieves a witness's oral testimony, it's not enough to say there's other testimony that corroborated his testimony, and therefore the credibility finding was wrong, let alone unreasonable.
I think that every piece of evidence the state court judge cited for disbelieving Vrsnik's testimony can be refuted and is refuted in the record. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal to address the 1983 issue.
Certainly, Mr. Hakim. Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you. May it please the Court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Aaron O'Neill from the Wisconsin Department of Justice, appearing for the respondent, Judy Smith, in this matter.
Could you raise your voice, please, Mr. O'Neill?
I'm sorry. Broadly speaking, the petitioner is seeking relief on two sets of claims and is brief to this Court. One set, as this Court already has touched on, relates to his claimed misunderstanding of one of the elements of the burglary that he pled to, specifically what felony he was intended to commit when he entered the victim's household.
Mr. O'Neill, I'm afraid I can't understand you.
Oh.
Could you raise your voice and speak distinctly?
Sure. One of the first set of claims relates to his claimed misunderstanding of the felony underlying his conviction for burglary. This Court should reject this claim on the merits because Mr. Idahl, this claim and the related ineffective assistance of counsel claims all depend on a state court factual finding that Mr. Vrsnik's has not shown is erroneous under 2254 subsection E. The other set of his
claims... Do you think he can contest this registration requirement in a habeas corpus case?
As I understand the claims that he's making, he's arguing that his no contest plea was not knowingly made because he did not understand that he would have to register as a sex offender. So as I understand that, that raises a constitutional claim.
If he got a chance to replead, is he seeking anything other than not having to register?
I think he's seeking to withdraw his plea to burglary entirely.
Why? Does he think he'll get a lighter prison sentence?
I don't know what Mr. Vrsnik's thinks, but...
Is he currently in prison on that sentence?
He is not in prison. He is being held for a sexually violent person commitment, but he is still serving his sentence because
Is that because his term has expired?
He's out, I believe, on parole, so he's still serving his sentence. They initiated the proceedings before... His
he's
release
on
from
parole
prison.
From this
offense, yes.
From this sentence.
So he's still serving his sentence. With respect to Mr. Vrsnik's claim that his requirement that he register as a sex offender...
If his parole had expired but he was still registered, would he be able to challenge that in habeas corpus?
The sex offender registration requirement? I think to the extent that it... relates to the voluntariness of his guilty or his no contest plea, yes.
No, that's not the issue. Suppose his parole has expired, so he's got no detention, either direct, he's not in custody in any sense, in the sense in which when you're in parole, you're deemed to be in custody. So he's free and clear, but he's still registered.
Yes.
Now, can he challenge that registration, that piece of his... of his punishment in a habeas corpus proceeding?
As I understand it...
Does he make the same arguments, he wants to withdraw and this and that, because he wants to get rid of the registration?
As I understand his argument, he's claiming that the
What's your position?
My position,
Is registration a form of custody, the way parole is?
Registration by itself, no, but I don't believe that it is, but... Again, as he's arguing, he's claiming that it is punishment for his conviction.
Of course it's punishment. It may be punishment. A fine is a punishment. But is it custody? Is it a custodial punishment?
No, it's not.
I think the appropriate thing to do is I will give both parties 10 days to file simultaneous memoranda addressing the question whether Mr. Vrsnik's is in custody on the sentence of which he complains, on the conviction of which he complains.
Okay, thank you. Briefly, there's a procedural issue that I have raised in my brief with respect to Mr. Vrsnik's raising of these claims relating to his sex offender registration in this court. Mr. Versneeks has never challenged the requirement that he register as a sex offender at any time before his request for a certificate of appealability in the district court. He did not raise it in state court, and he did not raise it in the district court in his petition or in a motion to amend or any of his briefs or any of his other filings. And regardless of what this court considers with the sex offender registry, whether it's cognizable in habeas or whether if it gets to the merits and determines whether it's punishment or not, I think this court has to conclude that he has forfeited his right to raise these claims in this proceeding, and also that they are procedurally defaulted due to his failure to raise them in state court. Unless there are any further questions, I ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill. Anything further, Mr. Hakim?
Judge Posner, I just wanted to briefly address your question before the briefs. In response to that question, registration has the effect of lengthening sentences because even when the appellant is out on parole, they can't actually live anywhere. So recently there was a New York Times article, the March 4th, 2007.
They can't live anywhere, are you saying?
There's so many restrictions on where sex offenders, registered sex offenders, can live. That
they're in custody?
Correct. They're not actually able to leave the facility.
No.
You don't have, like, excluding a person from a building is not false to prison.
Correct.
So it's not, you're not in custody because you're not allowed to enter the Dirksen courthouse, right?
But they were remaining in prison. So, for instance, the Wisconsin Department of Corrections has been trying to place a 77-year-old since 2003. They spent 4 years looking for a place to put him in Milwaukee. And they can't find any place where he can actually live, and so he's remaining in custody pending the ability to put him someplace. I'll address that issue further, obviously, in briefing.
What do you say to the state's suggestion that this whole issue was not before us since it was only raised in the Certificate of Appealability?
Judge Ripple, if I may respond, even though my time has expired.
Sure.
I believe that the Federal District Court identified the issue. They addressed it in the Certificate of Appealability when they granted it. They even addressed it when denying appellant's petition for habeas corpus. While it may not be raised sort of exactly, he's a pro se, it should be sort of construed leniently, and he does call to mind the claim, this constitutional claim, even in just his voluntariness arguments. He affirms that he knows it's a 10-year sentence, he knows it's a $10,000 fine. The only reason he cares about this consequence is because there's additional punishment of registration.
I think I have the point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hakim. And Mr. Hakim, we appreciate your willingness and that of your law firm to accept the court's request to represent Mr. Versneeks in this case, and we appreciate the good work you've done on behalf of both your client and the court. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and we will look forward to memos from both sides on the custody question within 10 days.